Blog Talk Radio.
This is Andrew Shatkin, and another evening on the Blog Talk Radio show, which I hope you'll enjoy greatly. It's a show of honest intellectual discourse, intellectual honesty, and honest discernment. We don't go in for media hype, media falsehoods, or the big lie. We don't go in for that. We go in for truth and facts. Tonight, as you may know, I have an MDiv from Princeton Theological Seminary and a background in theology, and I often speak on that subject. And tonight, I have written a book on the parables called The Parables of Jesus, a Personal Commentary. And one of the parables that I analyze in this book is a parable, the parable of the treasure. And I'm going to talk about that tonight. But before I do that, I'm going to give you a background of the parameters of this show, how it works, and what you can expect. So three things that I'm geared to in this show, this podcast show. I'm geared to literature and great books. I personally have a classical education in Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, and I've read many, many classical authors, including Homer, Livy, Catullus, Horace, etc., Herodotus. Most of them I have read Plato's Republic, and I have had great enjoyment and satisfaction in this education of mine, extremely valuable. I hope our society wakes up and offers this to our young students, where they will greatly benefit from it, rather than reading Cal Salinger's Catcher in the Rye, or Toni Morrison. I have nothing against those people, but they're not equal to Herodotus or Plato or Aristotle or any of these people by any stretch of the imagination. It's my personal opinion. There's no equality. These are the greats of the past. They will always remain great. But as I say, I have a great literary emphasis. I have great literature that I like. Tolstoy is one of my favorite authors, War and Peace and Resurrection, and Anna Karenina and his religious books. They're wonderful. And he was a very great thinker and writer, a genius of his time. And I hope that people will wake up to a genius like this and read his books avidly and absolutely. Another great genius and book that I value is John Milton and his Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. He wrote these while he was blind. And he wrote an epic poem, as Mortimer Adler said in his book, How to Read a Book, an epic poem is the greatest challenge a writer can face. And Milton wrote epic poetry, while blind and in darkness. He managed to do it. And also, as I said, I am a Christian. That's another parameter of this show. And I don't reject any other faiths. I love all men and women that Jesus died for on the cross. For me, the cross and love of Christ are before me in the face of every Hindu, every Buddhist, every Islamic person. Everyone I see bears the image and love of Christ. That's my view. I don't reject anybody. I welcome all ideas, opinions, races, nations, etc. I welcome all because Jesus died for them. Every one of them, and thousands of years ago, he died for them, and he still treasures them and loves them as a result of the cross. Third, I have a political emphasis. I oppose abortion and gay marriage. That doesn't mean I have any hatred to my gay friends. As St. Paul said in his letter to Timothy, Jesus wills that all men be saved and be with him in heaven. He wills that all men be saved, which includes our gay brothers and sisters, our Hindu brothers and sisters, and our Islamic brothers and sisters. He wills that all be saved, and I personally do hope that I will be in heaven with these people, that I'll have the opportunity to experience the love of Christ in relation to everyone that I meet. Next, I'm going to talk about myself and how this show works, a little bit of my background, so you'll understand it. This is a politically incorrect show. It's not politically correct. We're not concerned with media hype, media falsehoods, media lies. We don't care about those things. We don't believe in those things. We don't want to waste our time on those things. If we read a book, we'll read the Bible. We will read Paradise Lost. We will read E.M. Forster's A Passage to India or T.S. Eliot or anybody you may name that has the ultimate and lasting literary value which is available to them, to all men and women in the world. All they got to do is go to the library and take out a book or go to Amazon and order a book. They don't do it. They're cheated. They're being cheated. And if parents don't bring their children to the library, and if parents don't go to Amazon and get these books for their kids, they are not doing their work as responsible citizens and parents. I don't think so. Next, as I said, I have to say that even though I do oppose abortion and gay marriage, I have great love for every woman who chooses to have an abortion and for my gay friends who choose marriage with the same sex. They are valuable, they are important, and I treasure them and love them, for they know that Jesus died for them and wants and wills that all men and women be with him in the joy of heaven. He wills that for all men and women, everyone without question. Next, I'm going to talk about some other things here that might interest you. I'm running this Blog Talk radio show and has many, many visitors from countries all over the world, including Saudi Arabia and Iran. I have a philosophy student friend in Iran who loves my Christian books. This indicates her intellectual ability, that she, number one, that she's reading them, and that she's reading things that are not within her cultural context, which indicates me an intellectually capable person who is capable of much in every way, and is not wasting their time on the New York Post or anything like that. Next, as I say, I have many visitors to this blog show. They come from all over the country, all over the world. And I want to now talk about something else. I'm a writer. I've written 10 books. I have 4 more in process. These books are legal and Christian books. The Christian books are Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, and a book on the parables, and a book on the Psalms, my interpretations of all 41 parables and all 150 Psalms. I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, don't miss out on the parables. They are the thoughts and minds of the Son of God. Their greatness is very great. They represent thinking that is not available in our society at this point to anyone, because the person who is offering this thinking is the Son of God in Christ. Is thinking the parables are great. Read them 100 times. Read them 1,000 times. You will never exhaust their greatness and thinking that to how they may affect our thinking, which is very significant. I've also written a book on the Psalms, 150 Psalms. The Psalms are spiritual treasures. They are spiritual treasures. They are great thinking treasures. They offer as much in terms of thought. And most of all, they are great lyric poetry, Hebrew lyric poetry. I read them in seminary. Not all of them, but I read some of them. And to this day, I read the Psalms in the English translation. They're very great, even in translation. Their greatness comes across. And they are great lyric poetry of the Jewish nation. So that's as much as I have to say about the Psalms. I ask you to read the Psalms. You don't have to read my book. You don't have to read my books on the parables of the Psalms, but it's not going to hurt you to read the Psalms and parables, where you will be raised up. As Mortimer Adler said in his great book, How to Read a Book, we want to read books that will raise us up, that will pull us up and bring us up, and we do not want to read things or do things that will pull us down. whatever that might be. Being pulled down is bad. And our society, in fact, does pull people down in some level. That is American society, which pulls people down. I prefer to read books and do things that pull me up. And the great books, the worthwhile books, are the books that will stretch your mind and raise your intellect. Those are the books reading, whether Paradise Lost, whether Leo Tolstoy, The Resurrection, War and Peace, or Anna Karenina. Whatever books like that you read, you will be raised up and improved significantly. And your children, if they get the opportunity to read these books, will also be raised up significantly. I've written other books. I'm writing a book on my four blogs, which soon will be out. I'm submitting it to publishers, these four books, a political, theological, and philosophical blogs, and current events blogs. I have written I'm writing a book on the miracles in the Bible. The Bible is a supernatural presentation, and if you don't understand that and you go to the Bible hoping to get current events and newspaper knowledge, you're not going to get what you want. You will get, if you go to the Bible, you go to it to enter the supernatural realm of Christ and God. That's what the Bible offers, and to look for anything else, you're wasting your time immeasurably. Next, I must tell you that I have written a chapter on paternity in New York Family Law and Practice, which has had wide circulation, that I have written a chapter on evidence called Res Gestae and Bender's Consolidated Evidence. I have also written a encyclopedia article in New York Jurisprudence on criminal law demands and notices, and I've written three extensive law review articles, one on the Syracuse Law Review, which has had wide purchases in throughout the world, and it has been bought by the State Department and the United States Supreme Court. I've also written two articles on Academicus, an Albanian scientific journal, one on the United States educational system, which has been bought by universities throughout the world and by the State Department, and also my article on sexual orientation discrimination, which I oppose. I oppose any hate and discrimination. I mean, I agree with these behavior patterns of my gay friends. I don't agree, but I still give them love and consideration and the love of Christ and the image of Christ which they bear. And just recently, that article on Academicus, a Albanian scientific journal on sexual orientation discrimination. It's been purchased by a major publisher. It's going to be a chapter in a book, and it's going to come out to many, many sites all over the world soon. It's a chapter in a book. I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope you'll like the book. I hope you'll like the chapter. I think it's worthwhile. It has been bought by major, major universities throughout the world, of course, by the State Department. Next, I am going to talk about one of the most significant parables of Jesus in the Gospels, the parable of the treasure. So let's review the words of Christ in this parable. Found in Matthew 13:44, he says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field." This is a very significant set of words. Let's take a look at what he says here so we can understand what he's driving at. In Matthew 13:44, Jesus analogizes the kingdom of heaven, or perhaps we might understand it to refer to Christ, to a treasure hidden in a field, which a man finds and covers up. Now he finds this treasure, he's located God and Christ and perhaps the Bible, and he finds this treasure and covers it up. Then, knowing its great intellectual value and spiritual value, he goes and sells all that he has and buys this field. So let's get a handle on what Jesus is saying here. saying the kingdom of heaven, or he, Christ, or God, is like a treasure hidden in a field. If a man finds and covers up, he covers it up because he values it so greatly, and then he goes and sells all that he has and buys his field. Such is the value that that Christ has for this man. This particular parable can be underinterpreted or understood. The first sentence of the parable sets up a comparison to a man's unexpected find of a treasure. So he finds a treasure. It's unexpected. And that treasure is Christ or God. And so he's saying here that in this finding of a treasure, in some way people find Jesus in an accidental fashion. They may hear someone presenting the Christian message, or in some way Jesus enters that man's life like the treasure, accidentally. But then, having discovered the value of who Christ is and can be, he sells all that he has. He sells all that he has to buy this field and gain that treasure. The treasure is God and Christ, and so we might think that the sentence of the parable sets up a comparison to a person's unexpected find of a treasure. That is, it's an unexpected encounter with Christ. Perhaps in some way people find Christ or Jesus accidentally, not even looking for him. They may hear someone presenting the Christian message, or in some way Jesus enters that man's life like the treasure. And then when the man realizes the value of who Christ is, who is the treasure, and can be, he sells all he has. The man is said to sell everything he has to have that treasure, which he has accidentally found. And the treasure, we may think, it could be Christ or God. The parable is saying, in some way, the finding, we encounter Christ unexpectedly. We find him in an accidental fashion. We may hear people presenting the Christian message, or in some way Jesus enters that man's life like the treasure. And the man is said to sell everything he has to have Christ, having found that treasure in the field, which is analogized to Christ. It is significant when the treasure is found, which is Jesus, I think. It's an analogy to Jesus. The man realizes its great significance and importance to him, and he hides it and covers it up so that he may have it all for himself. And then he sells everything he has to have that treasure. So he does two things which indicate his understanding of the significance of Christ and God, which is the treasure. When the man realizes the great significance of this unexpected find of this treasure and its importance, he hides it. He hides it and covers it up because he sees it as so important and so significant. And he hides it so he can have it for himself. Then he sells everything to have that treasure. The parable is the recognition by the man of Christ and his kingdom of heaven. The man's recognition is so piercing and compelling that he gives up everything he has to have that treasure and possess it, possess that field. So let's understand what's going on here. The man is said to sell everything he has to have that treasure, which is Christ, which he unexpectedly found. And it's significant that when the treasure is found, which is Jesus, the man realizes great significance and importance. And he does two things. He hides it and covers it up so he may possess it for himself. He considers it so significant, and he sells everything to have that treasure. The parable is a recognition by the man of Christ in the kingdom of heaven. The man's recognition is so compelling and piercing that he gives up everything he has to have that treasure and possess that field. The parable is a little bit confusing, since the man's actions here are extremely selfish and reflect an intense self-involvement. You wouldn't think it's a Christian action. The parable is a little bit puzzling, since the man's actions are extremely selfish and reflect an intense self-involvement. Having found the treasure, the man is not inclined to share it or even show it to anyone. He covers it. It's a selfish action. His actions are selfish and reflect self-involvement. Having found the treasure, the man is not inclined to share it or even show it to anyone. Clearly the treasure, Jesus says, is hidden in the field, which is him, and is the kingdom of heaven, which is Christ. The treasure is Jesus, and the man covers it up, acting in a selfish, self-involved manner. But we must understand that he understands the value of Christ and his message. This parable reflects a man who is extremely intelligent about what he has found. He's very smart. He realized the value that Jesus possesses for him and all of us. But on the other hand, he doesn't want anybody else to know about it or find it, which is a little bit puzzling. He doesn't want to share it with anybody. In fact, his desire for Christ is so great that he's willing to sell everything he has to purchase that field. So, yes, he is selfish and self-involved. He holds on to the treasure, covers it up, and wants to sell everything he has to purchase that field. But in a sense, the man is very smart in seeing the value of Christ in his life. He's very bright in covering it up and selling the field. He understands and recognizes the value of Jesus, who is analogized to that treasure. On the other hand, he seems to only think of himself and having the treasure for himself, which might be that indicate a little bit of a selfishness. He wants everything for himself. No? That's what he seems to tell us. But on the other hand, he only thinks of himself and having this treasure for himself. Which seems to be a fault. He seems to be faulty, confused. But on the other hand, maybe he isn't. Because Jesus tells us we should recognize who he is and what he says to us. On the other hand, he tells us we should love him, we should know him, and we should recognize him, and we should be with him. But then it is somewhat puzzling and that the man taking everything for himself and unwilling to share with others. I hope you enjoyed this little talk about this parable of the treasure. It's found in Matthew 13:44. I think I've gone over it. I may talk about it again tomorrow night. But I think it's an important parable, because that treasure, which he covers up and sells all the fields to have, he wants it. So he recognizes the great intellectual value of Christ and his message, but he seems to be acting selfishly in holding on to it and covering it up. And his actions reflect an intense selfishness. Having found the treasure, the man is not inclined to share it or even show it to anyone. So as I say, I hope you've enjoyed this parable, Matthew 13:44. You can find it in my book on the parables on page 33, chapter 13. And you might want to read it. You certainly would want to read the parable and read it many times to get a grasp of what Christ is saying here. And as I say, in everything that Jesus says comes from the mind of God Almighty, and we cannot ignore it. We must read it and grasp it and understand it. His thinking is so in advance of our faulty mortal thinking that it's almost a joke. And our reading of his words is not a joke. It is a great privilege and a great honor. And we should never cease to read the words of Christ and the Psalms. Also, as I mentioned to you, which is the book I wrote on the Psalms. I think you'll find the Psalms of value. I think you'll find the parables of value, because they reflect the mind and thought of God and Christ. Good night. I hope you've enjoyed this talk.